Welcome to Get Up in the Cool, old-time music with Cameron DeWitt and friends. This week's friends are Jane Rothfield and Nathan Bontrager, a.k.a. Hence Teeth. And we play some old-time music that I'm excited for you to hear. We recorded this interview a few months ago at Clifftop, and I've been saving it for a special occasion, which this certainly is, because it's the last week of October. You all know that that's the month I appropriated to be Get Up in the Cool month. In a moment of panic, I did a quick Google to see what causes I might be detracting from, and I'm sorry to say that October is also American Cheese Month, Church Library Month, Church Safety and Security Month, and my personal favorite, Feral Hog or Hog Out Month. So I'm really sorry about diverting funds and distracting attention from these vital causes, but if you have it in your heart to forgive me, please consider signing up to support Get Up in the Cool on Patreon. It's a crowdfunding website that lets you regularly support your favorite online free stuff, like YouTube channels, webcomics, and of course, podcasts. And this podcast is pretty dang regular, almost every week. This is the 64th interview and jam I've posted, and I only started the show in July of last year. The only reason I've stayed this consistent is because of my Patreon supporters. I get bored and lazy pretty easily, and honestly, pretty self-conscious too. I mean, if I didn't have 56 people giving me money for every episode, it wouldn't take me long to start worrying that this was just a vanity project and call the whole thing off. So believe me when I say, I'm so grateful to all of you for making this show possible. It means so much to me. Especially my new Patreon supporters. Hopefully I say some or all of your names right. Here we go. Claire Christie, Gary Anderson, Misha Vickas, David Prinz, Jean-Paul Deblois Jr., and David DeWitt, my dad, who increased his pledge to $7 an episode so he could get the weekly EP reward, which gives him access to the newly tagged and formatted Get Up in the Cool archives of every tune recorded on the show, including the bonus tracks. It's more than 18 hours of music, and it's only going to get bigger because I add to it every week. There's also the monthly online banjo workshops. We're probably going to have another one of those this weekend. And of course, the weekly bonus track. This week's bonus track is Tough It, an original tune by Jane, and we play the hell out of it. I'd love for you to hear it. If you want to join the ranks of people who make this show, go to CameronDeWitt.com and click the button that says Patreon, or follow the link in whatever app you're using to listen to this. Find a level that works for you and sign up. Oh, I almost forgot. All pledges made before November will go directly to my guests for the following year. My goal is $50 an episode, but even after last week's burst of awesome generosity, we're still just halfway there, with only a week to go. So I'd like to ask a specific favor of all my listeners, all of them, that means you, make a post on Facebook, if you have a Facebook account, with the following link, patreon.com/getupinthecool. That's patreon.com/getupinthecool. If you're already supporting Get Up in the Cool, let people know that you're responsible for the continued existence of maybe their favorite show. Most people probably don't know unless they heard the specific episode where I gave you a shout out. If you can't give money right now, share the page anyway, because you might reach someone who's been meaning to sign up but just needs to see the link in front of them. All right, that's enough of that for now. Stick around after the interview for details on how to hear more from Jane and Nathan. Here's my jam and chat with Hence Teeth. Enjoy. Thank you. dog. Jane Rothfield, welcome back to Get Up and Cool.
Thanks,
and,
Cameron.
Nathan Bontrager, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Y'all are Hen's Teeth.
Mm-hmm. Sure are.
Very, very good band name. Where that? Who came up with that?
That was yours, Jane.
Well, actually,
it seems like a Janeism.
My husband Alan, who I've known for many, many years, finally told me that he actually wanted to name his band when I first met him, Hen's Teeth, but they said no, so they called it Twang.
Oh my goodness!
He said terrible, terrible name.
That's so a bad name.
He's always wanted to have Hen's Teeth be something that we called our band. So yeah, when we needed a name besides our two names, Hen's Teeth came up, and it just seemed to fit.
Yeah, it's very good. Did you get permission from Alan to appropriate his band name?
No.
Okay. Thanks, Alan.
No, thanks, Alan.
That's a secret to our success.
Okay. Yeah, right. He'd since forgotten, yeah. I'm sure.
Yeah. Very good. Maybe let's start with, how did you guys meet? Where did you guys meet? And how did you decide to start playing together?
Go for it.
Okay.
You go,
well,
Jane.
We're at Clifftop, at 2017 Clifftop Appalachian String Band Festival. And I think that's pretty much where I might have met Nathan first, because he was camping with some friends of ours, Harry Bullock, who I love playing fiddle with and who makes up great tunes, as I like to do as well. And so, you know, Nathan plays a cello, and we just started playing a lot together, and, you know, a couple times a year we'd connect at the festivals. And then I remember it was a couple years ago here at Clifftop, we were sitting playing fiddle and cello, and there was nobody else playing with us, which was very rare. And I remember the moment we were playing a tune called In the Moment, one of my tunes, and I sat there and I looked at Nathan and I said, dang, that's really cool. We should get some gigs. And he said, well, I live in Cologne, Germany. I was like, oh, well. But as it turned out, I was able to go to Europe last year, and so I got in touch with Nathan. I said, hey, you want to do some gigs? And we did, and we've done three tours over there so far, and we're doing some gigs here in the States, and we love to teach and play and have fun, and it's been really good.
Right on.
Right, Nathan?
Yes, it's very much fun. Yes, it is fun.
Yes, very direct.
Nathan, you're from Lancaster, right?
Yes.
Pennsylvania. Why are you in Cologne?
That's a very good question. It wasn't happenstance, but I had this sort of amorphous goal for a while that I wanted to live overseas for at least like a year or two before I got too old. And not that anyone's ever too old for that, but I had a sort of arbitrary goal of like, okay, before I'm 30, I'm going to do this. And that was coming up. And at that time, I was also looking to study Baroque music. And so originally I thought maybe I'd move like South America or somewhere a little more adventurous than Europe. Then since I was thinking about graduate school, I looked around some places there. Germany was free to study, so it was kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah.
And so I landed in Cologne. Cologne was never like a goal as a city, but it's kind of what happened and has worked out.
That seems like a place good. To study Baroque music. Mm. You play viola da gamba?
Yeah.
Did you bring it?
I wish, man.
It's probably super like.
It's a little. Fragile. It's a little sensitive for like hanging out in the woods with gut strings and everything. Yeah. But I would love to bring it sometime. I was just thinking about it the other day.
It fits
really nicely for old time music.
Maybe you could just like do a little edutainment for people who don't know what a viola da gamba is.
And,
yeah.
Modern pedagogue, you.
Yeah.
Learning can be fun.
Edutainment.
Learning is fun.
Edutainment.
It's a lie. Yeah. Learning's terrible. the gamba. Yeah, the gamba is.
Yeah.
Well, it's basically like a lute. It's like if a lute and a cello had a one-night stand at like a music convention and produced.
This is very edutaining.
See,
very
I'm trying to make learning
That's
fun,
what I'm
man.
Talking about.
It's like, you know, it's
made
like
it look sexy.
It's like when you were like youth group as a kid and they tried to make like the Bible interesting, but yeah, you know, there's actually a bunch of sex and violence.
There's a bunch of cusses in the Bible.
Cusses. Yeah. Cusses. Mama said don't cuss. It's a bowed string instrument with six or seven strings, and like the violin family, it comes in all sizes from big to small, but the big distinguishing factor is that it has frets.
Yeah
and you play and you hold the bow underhand, which no one can see what I'm doing right now in the
holding it kind of like a It's sort of like a German style.
It's like German
bass
except it's even further. It's even further around. It's like German bass. You kind of come in from the side.
He's got an underhand kind of like
Yeah.
It's basically like you hold your hand up like you're holding like a ball in it or something. That's pretty much the bow hold.
Why did like the first cellos have frets? That doesn't make sense to me that would be the first step.
Well, it's a little confusing because even though they look similar and it seems like there's a trajectory from gamba family to violin family, they're actually totally unrelated.
What?
Yeah. I don't know the real origins of like the violin family, but like the gamba, they're all these like Mozarabic instruments that made their way into Spain from North Africa with the Moors, and one of those was the vihuela, this little like a little Spanish guitar basically from back then. And at some point they started playing with a bow, and then it kind of turned into the viol. Huh. But the viol family ends with the double bass, but it has to do with how they're built basically. So in terms of sound and playing technique, they're obviously very related.
Yeah.
But historically they're different streams entirely.
Right on. Playing Baroque music. I don't think I've ever heard like actual Baroque music played on gambas or
period instruments.
Yeah, yeah. Why are you interested in doing that?
I got into it when I was in grad school, studying modern cello. There was a I think it was just the sound that appealed to me, frankly. Like, you know, playing on gut strings on these historic instruments, and with doing it in what people would call, you know, an informed way. So you're trying to pay attention to ideas about how people played back then. The sound really attracted me. Also, but not just the sound, like the way music is made in that world. Like, it's, I find, you know, early music and old time both appeal to me because they're very social forms of music making. And there's a lot of flexibility and improvisation within the form itself.
That's right. That's right. Because, like, are you, like, reading from, like, figured bass or something? Or, like.
That does. I mean, if you're playing a bowed instrument, you're not necessarily going to add a lot based on the figures. Mostly just the harpsichord player or lutenist or whatever. But there's all kinds of room for freedom in there.
I always forget that music is still folk music.
Yeah, exactly.
And I just, like, always think of it as being, like, stuck on the page. But at some point, it totally wasn't.
Yeah, especially when you get quite early. You know, I mean, later, like, Bach or whatever is a little more codified, a little more boxed in terms of how you play it. But there's still tons of freedom there as well.
Are viola da gambas, do they have just intonation?
This is, be careful with that question.
Oh.
No, only because I could talk endlessly about it.
Okay.
I gotta write
something. Just give us a little bit, and then we'll paint our tune.
Mostly, the short answer is that the temperament system that works best is some kind of, I can only remember the name in German always. Mean tone, either quarter or six comma mean tone.
Is that like a compromise between well-tempered and just intonation?
Yeah. Because well-tempered, you could technically do whatever you want, but if you want it to fit with the keyboard instruments, for example, it has to somehow
work.
At the same time, the instrument should sound good unto itself, so you use this kind of altered mean tone temperament. If it was pure mean tone, then certain chords would just sound like absolute crap.
Yeah.
But since you have flexibility with the strings, not as much as a violin, but you can still adjust stuff, you do essentially a compromised version so that things sound more or less all in tune.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more. Once you get into the nitty-gritty of it, there's a lot of variety and spice between the different keys in a certain temperament, which is quite fun.
Yeah.
It may not translate to, like, most people's ears, but
if
you're, like, nerdy and stuck inside this navel-gazing world, then it can be quite fun.
Well, I think it's, we all know about that.
Preaching to the choir.
Yeah, preaching to the choir, yeah.
I always like it when Nathan tunes my instruments, though. They always sound much better.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Do you not do a lot of, you do all by ear?
I do, yeah. I'm sort of stupidly so really distrustful of tutors, but there's no real reason to be like that.
Just a Luddite.
Yeah.
It's your Lancaster roots.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Electronics.
Let's play another tune.
Mm. Okay.
I'm trying to remember what the second one that we chose was. Day four.
Day four.
Day four, yes.
Yeah, okay. And I'm going to try to jig with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Jig it up.
So I made this up actually in day four last year, day four of Clifftop. And
Apropos.
Yeah.
Is this day four?
We might be day four.
Friday,
it was day
four Saturday, Sunday. Is
today
Monday?
Yeah, okay, it's day four.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
That's why it sounded so good.
Destiny.
And it's on in D minor, and for me, the tunes just kind of show up and they're pretty much done. So I was playing around with this and then got together with Nathan and played it as a jig just for fun, and so we're going to play an old-time jig called Day 4 Jig, and then we're going to play an old-time reel called Day 4 Reel.
Perfect.
By Jane Rothfield and Hen's Teeth with Cameron DeWitt.
There we go.
Yummy.
Oh, God.
Okay. Let's do it. Thank you. again. Got that day four energy.
Well done.
That's right, yeah.
That transition from the jig to the reel was like, I was very impressed with how you guys transitioned. That was super cool.
We have done a few times.
Yeah.
That's a fun one, though.
Yeah. Man.
Thank you.
I got to process that for a minute. Very good.
Messing with your head a little bit there,
yeah, just
Cameron.
A bit.
The one thing we don't get with old time ever is like the fun of like medleys.
Yes.
Which I don't always like them, but you know, sometimes a medley is just really nice.
Yeah.
And then the Irish get to do that all the time. Yeah. It's like, well, why not us?
Come yeah, on. Totally. I need to get to A real quick.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, let me get to A.
Me too.
Yeah. Tuning break. All right. So I wanted to ask you guys about your experience playing old time in Europe, mm-hmm. in general. Maybe I know you guys have played separate in Europe, but also together. And how do people like engage with this music, especially like your brand of old time over there? What's been your experience?
Well, really good. I mean, you know, we've played for old time audiences, and they're really enthusiastic about what we do because, you know, we do our trad stuff, we do some of my original stuff, and then we go off on sometimes little improv-y kind of things and take tangents and explore the tune, then come back, and they all really seem to like that. So that's been really great. And then the folks who aren't experienced with this music either, they really like it too. So it's, you know, it's like anything. If you make something interesting for someone to listen to, hopefully they'll come back. And there's a lot. We've been doing a lot of teaching over there as well as performing, and teaching in Scotland and in England and in Germany and in Holland and they just love old time music.
Yeah.
They, you know, the traditional music in Scotland and Ireland. You know, people who are drawn to acoustic music are gonna find old time.
Yeah.
Especially now with the internet and everything, there's so much more available to everybody. So they love it. They, in fact, we just did a workshop in Holland, and one of the questions from one of the sort of the leaders of the pack was, we said, "What do you want us to help you learn?" He says, "I want to know how to get that feel in a jam from Clifftop."
Yeah.
And we knew exactly what to tell them, which is just, you know, just listen and make eye contact.
Yeah.
And have fun. Right?
Amongst other things, yes.
And most of those things. And be in West Virginia in a beautiful day.
Yeah.
Anyway. So it's been great. I love it.
I'm always curious about like people who aren't from, who didn't grow up from like where this music was born, myself included, I'm always curious about like the way that different cultures sort of project different meanings like on to this music. So, for instance, my like limited experience with like playing with Japanese folks, they're very, very in, like, once again, very little. I don't know if this is a generalization or not, but like, they're very, very intense about the music and they want to play it exactly right. Those folks have been like maybe, I don't want to say precious about it. They've been like, they take it a little more seriously in like the tradition, replicating some of those old recordings and bow patterns and things like that, like a little more seriously than other folks. I've heard some people say that like Northerners in the States maybe have had a similar attitude about, being really strict about like old time rules and things like that. Obviously there's no standard in Appalachia because like to them, it's not Appalachia. It's like, no, this county is like what my music means to me. I guess I'm just curious, like in Europe and in the UK, like what do people think? Obviously they like it. Why do they like it? Is it like a, they see it as like a source of authenticity or something, or like what does it like mean to them?
I mean, I think it's just the same reason why we're all here. It's community, you know, the friendships and then if they get a chance, you know, sometimes people really want to delve deep and sometimes some people don't want to delve as deep. So I think it's the same, seems like a similar community from my experience in this country too.
Yeah, I think for sure in the UK, people in the UK have been playing old time for longer than anywhere else in Europe.
Yeah.
And which makes sense. I mean, the connection is obviously clear. there, I think, especially like the social aspect is quite obvious. You have a lot of, you have more people playing it, so you have more like regular sessions, and these people are, that's kind of their social life as much as their musical life as well. Europe itself is, I think, a little bit different in that there's just not as many people playing it, so you would have more people who get into it for whatever reason, and then they approach it with a almost more of an academic bent.
Yeah.
You know, and they want to get to the heart and soul of the authenticity of it.
Yes.
And then usually they're kind of operating by themselves, you know, at home with recordings or YouTube or what have you. Although I must say, in general, I haven't found people over there to be, even those who play, don't concern themselves all too much with tiny differences between different regional styles or anything like that. In fact, like, there would even be people who play old time, but for them it's more of just a part of a larger Americana thing that they're into.
Right.
Which can be, you know, which ranges from the like very normal and sort of hobbyistic kind of way to a sort of weird fetishization of of American culture. I mean that's all over the world, obviously.
But sure, like, sure.
There's a bit of a...
I mean, we do it here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, everyone in the world does that for other people. Germany, in particular, has a kind of weird subculture of Americana stuff.
Interesting.
And you can... Part of it's connected to this novelist, Karl May, who... I can't remember exactly all the details of it, but he wrote, like... His most famous book was Winnetou, I think. He wrote these, like, imagined westerns. I don't think he had ever actually been there, and he wrote these like really tons and tons of like really elaborate like westerns and cowboy novels, and like with really like pretty obnoxious like over the top portrayals of Native Americans and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's this whole sort of cowboys and Indians world.
Right.
But people like East Germans could get those books before the wall came down, and that was for a lot of them their only view into American culture. And so then you have like, I forget where it is, and there's a theme park somewhere over there that's all like America themed. It's really, I've never gone and I never want to, but
you have to go there.
It's sort of like, you know, it's sort of like, you know, your animatronic like Disney World robots with like overalls and straw hats on, like, playing Turkey in the Straw kind of thing. You would think if anyone would be concerned with authenticity and like, and the roots of all this stuff, it would be those people, and they're the most clueless of all in my experience. Because they have this idea of what America is like, or what sort of American folk culture is like, which is partially accurate, perhaps, but in large part they're just kind of making it up.
Yeah.
But don't seem too interested in deviating from the little world they've created for themselves.
Yeah.
Not to like badmouth a whole group of people.
Well, yeah,
that's,
I mean,
fine. It's just the,
I mean, people treat like, I mean, there's a whole, especially like a few years ago, there's like this whole what some people have dubbed Genericana, like the sort of pop music revival of like folksy sounds. Like all of the rock bands had banjos and stomp claps and stuff like that. Mumford and Sons, for instance, I feel like that exists here, and like, you know, we're closer in proximity, but like it's still like a fetishization of like sort of idea of like authenticity or like traditionalism, but totally not.
Well, we've found, I think, the people who come to our workshops and some of the weekends that we've been teaching, you know, they have repertoire, and they've listened to a lot of the original recordings, and they, you know, have a good sense of it. But now what they're looking for is just to get to the next level, to be able to play with, internalize that music, which maybe, you know, I grew up in, my exposure to traditional music was really in Connecticut with a lot of traditional French Canadian and old-time fiddlers up there, even though, you know, they weren't from North Carolina. It was still old-time fiddle, traditional fiddle music, and, you know, they're really just looking to kind of get the feel, and that feeling when you finish a tune and you're just, you know, laughing, it just feels so good, and it's why I play it.
Yeah. Like, yeah, me too.
So, anyway.
We should move on to, let's do Chilling Winds.
Okay.
Let's play Chilling Winds.
Ready?
Yeah. Thank you.
suits my clothes. Going down that long, lonesome, long, lonesome road. Going down that long, lonesome
Sports Are Sports song next. And you guys performed this with like a special like Appalachian string quartet, right?
We did this thing, the second tour that we did in the UK. Where was it then?
Yeah, we had a gig and then Ewan and Becca showed up.
Yeah, so I played a band with a Scottish guy there named Ewan McDonald, and he's a great old-time player as well, and he sort of carted us around in his wonderful van, the bongo, as it's called.
The bongo.
The bongo, yeah. The bongo, it's the greatest van. It's a Japanese company. I think it's just called bongo. It's called the Bongo Friendy. F-R-I-E-N-D-E-E. Friendy. Friendy.
That's the name of the brand of the van?
I think the brand is Bongo.
Bongo.
Because there's also the Bongo Adventure, which I've also traveled in before. That's another story. That's how I met Ewan McDonald, actually. We were traveling in the back of a Bongo Adventure through the deserts of northern Iraq. That's not a lie.
Not a lie.
Yeah. Before things were slightly more dangerous.
Movie at 11.
Yeah. Anyway, so we got together with Ewan and then this other great fiddle and viola player, Becca Wolf, joined up with us, and we did sort of an ad hoc string quartet thing, and we liked it so much we decided we wanted to at least record it or do something with it longer term. So
yeah.
The last tour we did, we got together and spent a day at Becca's parents' house recording five tunes, I think we did, and one of those was Sports or Sports. And we we did a lot of weird things with that tune. Like, we refigured it as like a 7-8 Balkan thing.
What?
And did all, yeah, it got pretty out there. We'll see if it's
I don't remember
salvageable
any of it.
from the recordings. But with that, the new name became Sporty McSports in homage to the British oceanographic laboratory.
Weather forecast?
No, that's something else. Oh. That's also very funny. The shipping forecast.
Shipping forecast, yeah.
Irish seas.
Calm.
Rough to middling. Later, good. Poor. Have you heard the shipping forecast?
No, wait, where does the Sporty McSport
name get explained?
Oh, right,
that's
where
I was
saying, okay. Yeah.
So anyways,
okay.
Like, they had this campaign to, like, name this this national, like, research boat, and they let the people decide.
Yeah.
And the winning name was Bodie McBoatface. Which apparently they didn't actually, like, approve it, which is really lame.
That's
like,
a shame.
Bodie McBoatface is great. So Sporty McSports. I think Sporty McSports was it, yeah.
Sporty McSports. But the name came from just, I was at a festival in Portland, Old Time Music Gathering, a couple years ago, and there was a lull, and I went to see where everybody was, and they were all in the den watching the game. The game and this huge TV, and I said, oh, what are you doing? Oh, we're watching the game. And I said, oh, sports are sports, for whatever reason. And then I sat down, this tune showed up.
Yeah.
So we'd like to do it for you right here, right now. Great. Right, Nathan?
Yeah, yes.
I refuse.
No, I'm done.
No, I don't want to play that tune.
We should totally, like, we should break up on air. That'd be awesome. That'd be a great.
Well, then the next episode you'll get back together.
Yeah, our duo will make break up.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. That'd be great for promotion.
You could be like pro wrestling. Basically.
Slam you down.
I'm in it for the music, but really for the story.
Exactly.
Sports are sports, aka Sporty
McSports.
Thank you.
case.
Did you write this tune at that party?
Yes, literally. I said, well, sports are sports. I sat down and that tune came out just intact.
There's a bit of anger in it, you know?
Yeah.
There's a bit of like frustration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good.
No one wants to play with me. They just want to watch sports ball.
Yeah.
Sports,
yeah, you know,
sport ball.
You know, because I'm angry so much of the time. So dang angry all the time.
So that you recorded with this group, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When is that coming out?
We'll see. There's a lot to sift through. I mean, it was like we had only a couple hours together, and we definitely like completely overreached in terms of the things we wanted to accomplish in that space of time. So like
that's what this podcast's all about.
Yeah.
I get it.
So there's a lot to be sifted through to see what's salvageable. I mean, the ideas were, I would say, all really, really interesting. Because part of the idea too was blending a sort of chamber music aesthetic the idea also being it doesn't really ever work when you take classical players and try and get them to sound like trad. But if you have trad players who have, it's not even a question of chops really, it's just sort of like familiarity. You know, do these other sound worlds also make sense? Then the doors are wide open, you can do whatever you want. So that was kind of what this group was. And we probably bit off more than we could chew, but that's fine. I mean, it's the beginnings of it. Some sort of demo will come.
Yeah,
out,
very, very cool. Well,
yeah, we spent an afternoon outside in a yurt in the countryside in England, down near
that sounds fun.
Near Lewis or something, and sort of worked up these things. And then the next day
I just found a Band-Aid on my head.
Oh. Rogue Band-Aid alert.
It used to be on my arm.
Anyway, and so.
Great story.
Oh, yeah.
One time when my cousin graduated from college in Harrisonburg, Virginia, we went out to the Boston Beanery, which is a really crappy restaurant, afterwards to eat. And everyone's food came out, and like my little cousin's plate came out, and like a hamburger, fries, salad, and then just like a giant Band-Aid was sitting on this plate. still curled up and round, like it just slipped off someone's fingers.
Oh no,
that's a real shame.
Yeah, he got a free brown Sunday, I think.
He got a free Sunday.
Also with Band-Aid.
With also a syringe in it.
It's mostly Band-Aids. Hey, you bet at the Boston Beanery. It's mostly Band-Aids. Okay, so you're in a yurt.
Well, we're outside the yurt because it was outside very, very hot. And we just spent the afternoon just kind of going through some stuff. And then the next day, we just literally just spent about 12 hours just running through stuff. I think I haven't listened to any of it yet, but some of the things are like 8 minutes long. So
they're pretty epic. It's some real prog rock.
We'll be doing some little editing and things like that.
Yeah,
but
there were
some very, we just kind of decided, well, we'll just follow our nose, and if it sounds good, it is good.
Well, maybe by the time this comes out, there'll be something that people can get.
Although we're available for gigs, so, you know,
yes,
if you want us, we're awesome.
And also, Hen's Teeth. Off the cuff and on the fly
is the name of our CD. Yep. And you can find us
perfectly encapsulates just like your energy, especially your energy, but like together, like the way you guys put together your tunes and like, yeah.
Dang. I love Jane's idea as well.
Oh, thank you. And it's a very
nice yellow. Alan's idea.
No.
Alan did everything.
No, Alan is a wonderful, supportive husband and also a fine musician as well. Yeah, so anyway.
I love your playing and I love your tunes.
Thank you.
I'm really glad that you found Nathan and that he feels the same way, you know. Yeah. And obviously your playing is wonderful. So, like, I'm excited to hear more.
We have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We do indeed.
Yeah. It's very obvious that you're having fun and that's why you're doing it.
Yeah.
Which is, like, as a spectator, but also as a participant, it's, like, just... it's very enjoyable because it's like you're listening to an interview, like a super or like improv comedy or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's a different. It's like improv comedy.
Edgy improv comedy.
Yeah, I love it.
Well, someone once said when they didn't know anything about us and they showed up at a gig and afterwards they said, you know, it was almost like watching and listening to a train wreck because you didn't know where it was gonna go. And like, what's gonna happen next around the curve, you know? And then
just
magically,
a
we would
perfect train wreck. Perfect train wreck. One of those really nice, clean.
Where everyone's going, whee!
Yeah, like a roller coaster, not a train wreck. Oh, that's the wrong metaphor. Oh dear. Anyway, we're having fun.
Roller coaster without a track.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Off the Cuff and On the Fly, you can get that now.
Yes,
Bandcamp.
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 You can find more information at janerothfield.com.
Yeah, yeah.
We have a little page there. Eventually, we'll have our own site, but
and,
right now,
that's and hire you two for gigs and stuff.
Yep,
and,
yep. Yeah. We're available very for good. All sorts of fun.
Cool.
Children's birthday parties, for example. Yeah.
Especially Nathan. He's very good with children. He is.
Thank you.
He's shrugging.
can you hear my shrug?
Shrug.
Yeah, I forgot it.
Yeah.
Sullivan's Hollow.
Oh yeah.
All right, so this is the last tune. Jane, Nathan. I mean, we can play more if you want, but.
We'll be here for a week.
Maybe. Yeah, we'll be here for a week. Thanks so much for being on the show. And,
thank you for doing it. It's amazing.
What are we going to end on?
We're going to.
Sullivan's Hollow, slow version of it.
Yes.
It's also connected to the quartet project. This was. Ewan introduced us to this way of playing it.
Yeah.
And it really, like, hits that, like, lush. Chamber string quartet kind of spot. So.
Right on.
Yep. Thanks. Thank you.
you want to hear more of Hen's Teeth's music, you can follow them on Facebook and at janerothfield.com under the Bands tab. Their album Off the Cuff and On the Fly is available on Bandcamp, and you should buy it. It has Theo's Waltz on it, named after my son. And you know, badass duets with fiddle, banjo, and cello, so go get it. If you're an old-time player of any or no skill level, you should go to Janie's Jumpstart Camp. There's one over Veterans Day weekend in Oxford, PA, so you should sign up quick if you want to reserve a spot, if there's any left. Go check it out. The staff will feature Jane, of course, Kelly Allen, Terry McMurray, Shona Carr, and Paul Brown. You know, the host of Across the Blue Ridge, that other old-time podcast. And if you're a fiddler, cellist, or guitarist in San Francisco, Jane and Nathan are coming your way for a Janie's Jumpstart Camp in February. Go get that knowledge. For more information and signups, go to janiesjumpstart.com. That's J-A-N-I-E-S jumpstart.com. I'll include a link to that and everything else I mentioned in the show notes on my website, the Facebook page, and whatever app you're using to listen to this. And remember, I could really use your help spreading the word about the Get Up in the Cool Patreon. Just write a Facebook post and type in patreon.com/getupinthecool, and a linked thumbnail will appear for all your friends to click on. Maybe include a plug for the specific reward you signed up for. You could even mention that everyone who signs up before the end of October will get a download of Get Up in the Cool Volume 1, as well as Volume 2 when it comes out next year. And if you're ready to sign up to support the show this week, go to CameronDeWitt.com and click the Patreon button. All new pledges or increases this month will go directly to my guests for the following year. So it's time to make it rain on the show's better half. All right, you know what to do. Go forth, spread the good news. And thanks for listening, friends. Come back same time next week for more Get Up in the Cool.